Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Mac Attack Show. I'm your host, Jay Mac, and I'm delighted and excited to have my friend and my brother, our very own Commonwealth Attorney of Sussex County, Mr. Vincent Robertson. And we are in the June Justice episode. Last year around this time, we talked a lot about George Floyd, activism, being an advocate for justice, and some of the same injustices continue to happen to our community. So I thought it'd be great to talk to a person who has fought for justice in our community, as well as has traveled across this country doing good things for great people. He's a great man, and I'm going to let him tell us about himself. So, Brother Robertson, welcome to the show. Please tell us about yourself.
Well, first of all, thank you, Reverend McLaughlin. I really appreciate this opportunity to reach out to address your congregation and your listening audience beyond your congregation. It's indeed my pleasure to be here today, and I just wanted to extend my thanks for this opportunity. As far as my background, I'm originally from Montgomery, Alabama, the deep, deep South. I grew up there, left there around 1981 or so, joined the Marines, and served in the Marines for 20 years. Traveled around the world doing different things, and it was at that point that I established my passion for being a lawyer. So while I was on active duty, I went to law school, graduated from law school, became an attorney. And since then, I have had the pleasure of doing two things that I'm most passionate about in my life, other than being a father, but being an attorney and being a Marine. So it's a great thing. I'm living here in Stony Creek, Virginia, here in Sussex County. And I came here by way of a special election last year where I became the Commonwealth's attorney. So that's pretty much me in a nutshell.
Awesome, awesome. Thanks for sharing and thanks for being with us on today. So many people, believe it or not, aren't aware of all that a Commonwealth attorney does. Most common phrase I've heard is they police the police. But could you give us some more insight on the roles and responsibilities of a Commonwealth attorney?
And that's a very good question, because the role of the Commonwealth attorney is extensive. It's extensive. It's not just limited to law enforcement, where we police the police, or we're involved in, obviously, in the crime and punishment. But it's a little known fact that the Office of the Commonwealth's Attorney, or the Commonwealth's Attorney in Virginia, they refer to as Commonwealth's Attorney, in other states they're called district attorneys, is probably the most influential position in our local and state government. And the reason I say that is because that's the touch point when it comes to who goes to jail, how much time they're recommended for jail, what cases get brought. Governor doesn't do that. The General Assembly writes legislation. The governor may fund that legislation or may request money for that legislation when it comes to crime, and they may write crimes or acts that could be criminal. But ultimately, it's the Commonwealth's attorney that brings those cases to judges. Even judges don't have the same amount of power, because the judge can't try a case unless that case is presented to him. And when it comes to criminal cases, only the Commonwealth's attorney can present cases that are of a criminal nature to a judge. Only Commonwealth's attorney can prefer what charges are going to be brought and recommend what punishment should be sought in particular cases. So from that standpoint, it's a huge endeavor. But the role and the responsibilities go beyond that from my perspective, because it's more of a holistic role when it comes to crime prevention, having safe neighborhoods and streets, being proactive, working in the schools, working with the different community services. The different communities, agencies and everything throughout our neighborhood, participating in the food drives and the voter registration drives and things of that nature are just as important. For a young kid to see me in the classroom means something, as opposed to in the courtroom. And that's leaning forward so that children will can have an understanding of what the law is and how to best work within our system of government.
Awesome. I appreciate that insight, especially this time last year for me in the circles I'm in, there was a lot of outcry about appointed judges and the president at the time appointing various judges and how much of an impact that would have on Black and brown communities. However, it sounds like we have a great opportunity as a community to vote in and elect Commonwealth attorneys who can have even more influence than these appointed judges. And so while someone may be appointed that does not have your best interest at heart, we still have the power to elect attorneys for our communities that can fight for us, but not only fight from a legal standpoint, as you mentioned, also help out in the classrooms, help address the needs and issues of the community, whether they be legal or otherwise. So thank you. That was very informative.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So speaking of classrooms and young people, I'm sure someone listening may aspire to be a lawyer. And I'm sure with all of your travels and cases, you have seen a lot. Is there any information you can give to someone that desires to be a lawyer about how to make it? Of course, it's obvious you have to go to law school and you have to do well in school to even get to that point. But any advice you would like to give someone that wants to pursue a career in law?
Right. Well, it's a couple of things from that standpoint. Law is important. It's a very worthy, worthwhile profession and endeavor. But most important, the most important ingredient when it comes to success, whatever it is that you want to do, because it applies to whether you want to be a lawyer, a doctor, or anything else, an engineer, an architect, you name it. And that's focus and aim. You know, that's where it starts. What are you focused on? What do you want to be? What do you see yourself doing? If you see yourself being a lawyer, then you have to do those things that are consistent with becoming a lawyer. And as you brought out, you got to do well in school. Well, you got to do well in school anyway, because you've got to compete with other people who are in school, whether it's to be anything in life, you know, it's important. So the thing that's different about an attorney than any other, any other profession, is the critical thinking aspect of it. And the knowledge retention. It's a lot, believe it or not, it's a lot like being a preacher in some respects, because you're dealing with the interpretation of law, right? And not only that, but you're using that interpretation of law to move people to a better understanding of what is the right way. So it's a very close relationship between the two. You got one book, I got a shelf full of books.
And when we speak of precedents, there might be a scripture here or there, but like you said, you have a lot of precedents that you deal with to say, this is what was done in the past, this is what should be done now.
So what's most important, though, is this, is that once you establish your goal, you've got to work toward that goal. And you've got to believe and you have faith that you can accomplish those things. And I believe personally that your work is your it's an outer representation of your inner faith. If you're working, you're expressing your faith. It's no different if you're on a job. You work in anticipation that you're going to get paid when payday comes around. But if you express your faith in the same respect when it comes to becoming an attorney or whatever else, and you put those things in place, then those are some of the keys to success. And I'm not one to brag, but I've been successful because I've used those keys to success and just having faith and believing that I will be able to accomplish that which I've set myself out to accomplish.
Amen. You must have the faith. You must have the faith. You must have the work ethic. Utilize the skills God has given you, and you must have focus. Amen. I like that. I have to ask this question. I wouldn't be me if I didn't address this. Waverly's been in the news lately. Mm-hmm. Waverly has made national news, especially on social media, for a case that happened some 23 years ago now, dealing with two young men. Well, the case deals with more than two people, but in particular, the names, and correct me if I'm wrong, Faron Claiborne and Terrence Richardson.
Yes.
Could you educate us, for those that are unfamiliar, on the case and your role as Commonwealth attorney in addressing all of the appeals and the outcry that has come from the community? Celebrities such as D.L. Hewley and many others are taking a position on this. And I want you to educate us about this case, if you don't mind.
Thank you. Thank you, brother. I appreciate that, because that's something that's obviously very close to home here in Sussex County, even though it's, as you said, it's attracted nationwide attention. And I'll tell you that I received cards and letters and emails, text messages from all over the world, because this is a very important case. Here are the facts. First of all, let's kind of lay down the foundation on how this case came about. Back April 25th of 1998, Officer Alan Gibson was on patrol in the town of Waverly. And while he was in the line of duty, he was killed. That's the allegation. The investigation led to Terrence Richardson and Faron Claiborne. They were charged with his murder. Now, back then, and it wasn't until recently, that if you killed a police officer, which is the death sentence, right? For the death of a law enforcement officer doing his official duties or while in the line of duty.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that one more time? Because we lost connection for 1 second. Okay. Back then, what would happen if someone killed a police officer?
If you killed a police officer in the line of duty, you were facing the death penalty. In other words, capital punishment, which is the death penalty. So that's what these two men were facing. The evidence in the case was not as strong as obviously they would like it to be. So they offered them a plea of a significantly lesser charge, and that was voluntary manslaughter and accessory to voluntary manslaughter. So Terrence was convicted of voluntary manslaughter. Faron was convicted or pled guilty to accessory to commit manslaughter, which resulted in some very, very lenient sentences. So obviously public outcry about that, because you had law enforcement that had been killed in the line of duty, and the sentences that resulted in there, taken into consideration, Terrence and Faron are Black. The officer is white, and he's a police officer. So we have to dismiss that fact. So they were given the opportunity to plead to those charges, which they did. Because of the public outcry, the federal government picked the case up. So the federal government, via its Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, brought down the full weight of the federal government, the United States of America, in this case, all of the resources that come with that. And the case went to a jury. The cases was the murder of Mr. Claiborne. I mean, the murder of Alan Gibson, and charged both of them with that murder. They also charged them with some conspiracy to distribute drugs. The jury heard all of the evidence in the case with respect to the murder. They heard all of the evidence in the case with respect to the drugs, and they found them not guilty of the murder. Okay, but they did find them guilty of one count on with respect to the drug case. So as a result of that, when the case came around for sentencing on the drug case, the judge that sat in circuit court, in federal court, took the circuit court plea of guilty that they entered for the manslaughter case and used that to increase the punishment for sentencing purposes in prison in federal court. So what went from what typically would be a 10-year sentence, and that was even a great deal then because of what we refer to as the crime bill, because the crime bill was right at its height during this time frame, if you recall that, the 1992 crime bill.
I was about to say, was that Bill Clinton's crime bill? 10 years. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. So essentially, they were looking at about 10 years, sir. They would have finished that sentence over 10 years ago. But because of the fact that they pled guilty in state court, the judge used that to sentence them to life in federal prison. And that's where we have this, you know, this imbalance when it comes to overpunishment. And that's why they are, obviously, they're trying to withdraw. Now they've moved to withdraw their appeals. They're moving to withdraw their state court pleas here in Circuit Court in Sussex County in hopes that they will then get the judge in federal court to reverse himself. Because the thinking is that he used the circuit court plea of guilty to enhance their sentences in federal court. So that's where we are with that. Now, the question is why would someone plead guilty to murdering someone and then they knew they didn't? How does that happen? You think about it yourself. I would never plead guilty to something I'm innocent to.
But you know, most cases, especially dealing with
many.
I'm sorry to interject. I was just going to say, is it true that most cases, especially dealing with young African-American males, they take plea bargains or they take lesser deals for fear of larger punishments, even if they're not guilty? Yeah.
Yes. And when you look at the evidence in this particular case, it wasn't necessarily overwhelming. But you're dealing with the heightened issues involving law enforcement, death, black guys, white officer, the optics of it. What are the chances that they would be able to prove, not necessarily prove, but they would end up getting off on those charges? So the offer of manslaughter, 10 years and you're out in a couple of months or so, because they didn't have much of a record, that's very appealing. If you're impoverished, in other words, you don't have money to afford a lawyer, you don't have any education when it comes to the legal system and how it works, you don't understand the law and how that works. And when you take a look at the evidence, you say, and your lawyer is advising you to take a plea. You see that on television all the time. Hey, man, you need to take a deal and all this other stuff. I'm not going to plead. And the next thing you know, they're pleading. So that's how it happens. And because of the way I'm sure that it was explained to them that, you know, you're going to plead to this and this is the best thing that you could possibly do, because if you don't, then this is what's facing you. We don't have the resources or the money to develop this case the way that it should. So that's why people take pleas. Now, when it came down to how my office got involved in this, is when they decided they wanted to withdraw their pleas, all of the attention was focused here on Sussex County and the Commonwealth's attorney. This is one aspect, and this is one example of the lack of knowledge about the law. The Commonwealth's attorney doesn't accept a plea, nor do we grant a plea. That's not our job. That's a judge. So if somebody pleads guilty, they plead to the judge, not to me. So if I don't accept the plea, how can I overturn the plea? That's for a judge to do, right? It just makes sense. A lot of people don't understand that. Now, so when it comes to this case centers solely around two judges, the one here in state court in Sussex County, and whether he's going to allow them to withdraw their plea. And then the federal court judge in terms of whether he's going to overturn or vacate the sentence of life that he imposed on them back in 2000. And so we'll have to see. Now, there have been some changes with respect to this case. There's new evidence that has come forward that should have been available to them back in, you know, when this case was first came about, that may have changed the outcome of the case. And that's a significant piece of evidence, or pieces of evidence, that will really, I think, will bode in their favor. So we'll see how that goes.
Wow. Thank you for that information. And so dozens of thousands of people have cried out about this case, and a lot of attention has been given your way. Based on what you're saying, is it safe to say that instead of addressing the Commonwealth Attorney and the Attorney General of the state, people should be focusing their attention on those judges who could overturn or change a decision? Is that safe to say?
It is. I mean, it's safe to say in the federal judicial system is a little different than the state judicial system. Federal judges are essentially appointed for life. So they're not worried about coming back up for reappointment like a state court judge is. So in order to get a federal court judge to reverse himself on a case particularly like this, it has to be a basis of law. It just can't be based on, yeah, you're right, I shouldn't have done that. It has to be some law to support it. And if the judge finds that their pleas were not, you know, that the pleas have been withdrawn, then it does open up a door for them to plead new facts and circumstances, material change in those facts and circumstances that would warrant a review of that earlier sentence. And this case may end up going back up to the United States Supreme Court, or going up to the United States Supreme Court. We don't know. So it may be a while before this case is resolved. Now, right now, my office is in, I'm in communications with the Attorney General's office. I'm working with them to see how this is gonna all come out. We've reviewed all of the, we're part of this case from a certain perspective. Anything that comes out of the Court of Appeals comes to my office, even though the Attorney General's office is the lead on the appeal. And I don't know what their position is with respect to how they see this case. And I'm working with them with respect to kind of maturing that position, because the thing is this: these young men should be able to use the same system that was used against them. So, and they're doing those things that are within the system now. They're not just talking about the case. They have an appeal that's before the courts, and it's working itself through the system. And we wholeheartedly support that process, because it's the right thing to do. But we're not the ones who make the final decision about what happens in this case.
And I want to be clear for all listeners and all viewers. I am not justifying killing of police. I'm not advocating for that. We're not advocating for a shorter term for if anyone is guilty. We're looking for justice. We both believe in justice and what's right. And I also believe in channeling energy in the right way. While I understand how people feel, and I have personally experienced the loss of a loved one. And so my heart goes out to the family of Brother Gibson, and mm-hmm. our prayers and our thoughts are with you. And I also have been on the side of an outcry for justice, because a family member may have been wrong. And so I understand both sides. And I just hope that we can learn who to direct our energy towards. And I, my last question for Attorney Robertson is with that, and he pretty much already laid it out for us, the judges are the ones who have the power or authority to change this decision or possibly let these young men go free. And my hope and prayer is if they are not guilty, then they do receive justice. And so I just want everyone yes, sir.
No, I'll say this, and I appreciate and I understand why you would position your statement about if they are not guilty. But here's the thing, bro, and this is not a newsflash. A jury of their peers in federal court found them not guilty. Who am I? You don't understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
jury
yeah,
of their peers, and a lot of people say, well, you know, they're not. You know, it's not a question. There's not a question anymore. Whether it was based on a technicality or whatever the case may be, 12 people sitting in judgment of those young men found them not guilty of this officer's death. Now, this is important. I want to say this real quick, and then we can press on. Officer Gibson is not just some amalgamation. He's a person. He had a daughter. He's a young officer who had a family, was starting a family. He had, and he was a member of this community. He lost his life serving and protecting the people in the town of Wayland. So we cannot just dismiss him with respect to what's happening with regard to these two men, because there is someone out there who needs to come be brought to justice with respect to his death. And it will be no Amen. Different under any set of circumstances if that same person was a black officer, or if that same person was just a regular guy who worked as a janitor somewhere. It doesn't matter. It's a human, it's a loss of life, and justice demands that this person, that this matter be fixed. So I just wanted to say that if they were not found guilty in federal court, why are they serving life? That's, you know, I think that's the question. Now, they were not found not guilty of everything. That was a punishment. That was a reason why they were exposed to some punishment. The question is whether this is over punishment. And I think that's where we are with it.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, thank you for that. And yeah, I just want to be clear. I fully believe, because of the verdict, that these men deserve justice and that they're not guilty. I was just articulating my general rule of thumb is if a person's not guilty, I want justice. Right. If a person's guilty, I believe there should be justice. And so we want what's right for these young men. We want justice. We want the right things to happen. And so any closing thoughts for those who look to march, those who are writing letters, appeals, who should the people reach or address?
Well, because there are so many cases around the country like this. Mm-hmm. I mean, not one, two, three. I mean, it's hundreds of cases around the country like this. Resources are scarce. The people who are smart and passionate about this type of work are limited. So there's two things here that I want to really mention real quick. In terms of agencies or organizations that support these types of efforts, you have the Innocence Project, you have the ACLU, you have organizations like the Southern Poverty Law Center, as well as the NAACP National Defense Fund. There are a lot of different agencies around that accept donations, because a lot of those cases are not government funded. They accept contributions and things like that for these types of cases to help out. And those attorneys don't get paid a lot of money, but the work, I'm telling you, the work is there. So on the last note is this. The most important thing that I can do in my role as Commonwealth's attorney is take into consideration not only of the life that's lost, because the family of Alan Gibson are still suffering. But I also have to make sure that I do justice in my position as Commonwealth's attorney. And that's huge. And is a lot more difficult than people think. I could have came out and spoke about this case months ago, but it wasn't prudent, wasn't appropriate, because there was nothing to talk about. There was nothing that had been filed or anything like that. And I just wanted to be a politician and, you know, pound my chest and say all those things that I'm going to do and not put any work in. Then I'm just, you know, it's not serving any purpose. So when I affect my influence in this office is to ensure that justice is served, not just for the victim, but also for the defendant, to make sure that it's a balance. Mete out justice with mercy. And that's important for me here.
Amen. Micah 6 and 8, what does the Lord require? Part of it is seek justice, love mercy. So thank you for that. Thank you for this information. And I hope everyone continues to fight for justice, fight for what's right, and do it in the right way. Thank you, Brother Robertson, for your time. Absolutely. We really appreciate your insight and all that you do for the community. Is there any closing thoughts you want to share with the people, not regarded to the case, but just in general, about the Commonwealth Attorney, about what we're doing here in Sussex County? Anything going on that you want the people to know about?
Yes, I just want to say that I'm excited about the work that we're doing in this office. We have so many different things and initiatives that we're starting here. We're looking at a drug court program. We're looking at mental health programs. We're opening up. We're working on opening up an office here, so when room for when kids come to the court with their parents, the kids have a room to play in. We're focusing on the reduction of crime or drug-related crimes here in the county. I have a great relationship with the sheriff, and we're involved in the community. I mean, we're intermeshed into the community here in so many different ways. Every time there's a blood drive here in Sussex County, I'm rolling up my sleeve and giving blood. And we're now, as we're starting to come out of this pandemic, we want to be more of a force for change in respect to how law enforcement is viewed in our community. They serve a role. They serve a very important role in our community, and that role has been kind of skewed based on the acts of a few, and then the overall impression of many. And we're trying to educate people about that work that we're working in the schools. One of the things I'm excited about is this fall we intend on bringing children into the courtroom so they could experience the courtroom and get a courtroom experience. So they start having that knowledge base and understand how things are done here in the court. We also want to take those same kids up to the General Assembly to see how laws are made. That's the foundational construct of our system, of how things work within our government. And if you can understand that, then your life can be so much more successful, so much more peaceable, I think, anyway. So that's, we got a bunch of other things, but, you know, keep it limited. But that's where we're at right now, brother. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Awesome. A lot of work for the young people. I think one of the keys to a community success is young people being exposed to great programs and great things, and letting them know that they too can accomplish success in their lives. So thank you for all that you do. Thank you for being an advocate for justice. And this is the Mac Attack Show. Thank you for tuning in, everybody who's listening. Next episode will be about godly fatherhood. It'll be a Father's Day edition, a special episode about biblical fatherhood. But today we talked about justice. June is a month, well, all months are a month for justice. But I want to do a special episode with our Commonwealth Attorney here. Thank you, Brother Robertson. God bless you all. Be blessed. Okay.